It is Monday, April 11th here in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. In the next half hour, U.S. Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump is escalating his verbal attacks on the establishment of his own party. What's behind that? I'll ask the political director of U.S. TV network NH1. U.S. officials are sounding a new alarm about the threat of the Zika virus. Our White House correspondent brings us the details, and we'll bring you to Ivory Coast to find out how an all-woman band defied the odds to achieve musical success. It's all ahead on International Edition. U.S. Republican presidential contender Donald Trump has sharply criticized the system for selecting delegates to the Republican presidential convention in the western U.S. state of Colorado. The frontrunner for the Republican presidential nomination lost dozens of delegates to his better-organized rival, Republican Senator Ted Cruz, in a series of Colorado conventions last week. I spoke on the phone a short while ago to Paul Stenhauser, political director of U.S. TV network NH1, and I asked him what he makes of Donald Trump's criticisms.
Donald Trump reacted the way most people thought he would. He got angry and he started name-calling. Listen, Donald Trump didn't like the rules the way they were. He got out-muscled, I guess you could say, in Colorado. Out-hustled. And Donald Trump reacted pretty quickly, calling the system crooked and stacked against him. And Donald Trump also threatening to a way the Republican National Committee, saying that the people are against this and the RNC better watch out. So Donald Trump, pretty angry. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was almost, you know, you could almost place the blame on the Trump campaign. They knew the rules that were there, and the Cruz campaign out-muscled them very strongly in Colorado and won all 34 delegates.
Well, how much sympathy is there in, you know, Colorado and just more widely for Trump's allegation that the Colorado caucus system is unfair?
Well, and that's where Donald Trump has an advantage here, because this system right now, Colorado last year canceled their Republican caucuses. And so unlike a caucus or a primary where the delegates are won or lost by a popular vote to a degree, this was all 34 delegates in Colorado on the Republican side were decided by a state convention, which seems very undemocratic in a way. And that's Trump's argument that, you know, this is the party is going against the will of the people. And that's why his argument will have some legs.
Well, Donald Trump has been laying low for the past couple of days, which is also a little uncharacteristic of him. Why is he not doing any campaigning right now?
Yeah, he did lay low for about 4 days, and for the first time in about 4 months, Donald Trump was not on any of the Sunday talk shows. He didn't even call into one. So you got to go back a long, long way. I think one of the reasons why there's a little restructuring going on at Trump's presidential campaign. His campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, is still at the head of the pie chart, but he's got a lot of other big players now, and one of them, who's gaining more and more power, was on one of the Sunday talk shows. So I think Trump wanted to lay low as kind of things were changing at his campaign. That appears to be over with now. He was back on the campaign trail late Sunday night and back again today, and he's got New York in his sights. We've got 8 days until the New York primary, a ton of delegates at stake. The polls suggesting Trump is right around 50%, so you're going to see a lot more of Donald Trump now.
And what about the Democratic side? They're also competing for the win in New York. How is Bernie Sanders doing in his effort to get a come-from-behind win against Hillary Clinton, who is ahead in the polls?
You're seeing on the Democratic side a lot of what you've been seeing on the Republican side for quite some time, and that is a lot of shots being fired and a lot of name-calling and allegations. That's stuff we've been used to for months on the Republican side. The Democrats, not just Bernie Sanders, but Hillary Clinton as well, kind of doing that. Just in a few hours ago, Bernie Sanders in New York State applauding that state's efforts to ban fracking, and he called for a national ban on fracking, and then he reminded voters at that rally that my competitor, Hillary Clinton, feels very differently about fracking. Clinton bringing up Bernie Sanders, what's been described as his disastrous interview about a week ago with the Daily News, and she questioned whether he even knew his own strategy about dismantling the big banks here in the United States. So both candidates definitely shooting at each other over policy and politics. And again, this comes with just 8 days ago until the New York primary. Bernie Sanders has won 8 out of the last 9 contests. Hillary Clinton's still way ahead when it comes to delegates, but Sanders has momentum right now. New York State, Hillary Clinton, she represented New York State for 8 years in the Senate, and she really needs to win big next Tuesday.
And put a stop to that series of Sanders wins if she can. Well, thank you very much to Paul Stenhauser. He is an anchor and political director at New Hampshire TV network NH1.
Thank you very much. Great to join you.
Well, staying with domestic politics, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here in the Studio 22 to tell us what people are saying on social media. Hi, G.
Hi, Michael.
Well, what's new today?
All eyes are in New York this week. On the GOP side, frontrunner Donald Trump is going to miss 2 votes from his own kids. It turns out Eric and Ivanka Trump are registered voters, but they missed the deadline to register with a political party in their home state.
Well, how did we find this out today?
Because Trump said it during his interview with Fox News this morning.
Well, Trump is way ahead in the polls in New York,
he
may still win. But what is the online reaction like?
Let's be honest, it's quite funny, although probably not for Trump. Many people are joking online that maybe his kids didn't register with the Republican Party because they didn't want to make America, they wanted to make America great again by not voting for their own father.
Well, I did see one of Trump's campaign workers on U.S. network television today saying that if Trump is the nominee, they will vote for him in the fall, so they will still potentially
get
a chance to vote for him after all. Well, what about the Democratic side?
Bernie Sanders, who won several consecutive primary wins Saturday, released a new ad. The 30-second ad quickly became a trending topic on both Facebook and Twitter because it's directed by Spike Lee, and this is interesting in 3 ways. Lee is one of the leading African-American filmmakers of our time, so the quality is great. It's also powerful in that this could boost Sanders' popularity among ethnic minorities. His rival, leading Democrat contender Hillary Clinton, is very popular among black voters. Last but not least, the ad features prominent activists speaking directly to the camera. They include activists Erica Garner, Sean King, and Harry Belafonte. Belafonte, as you know, is actually better known as a singer and definitely a household name in America. Now, the last person featured on that ad is Muslim American activist Linda Sarsour. When people wrote in the comment section of Sean King's video post that they want something longer, he replied, "We have something coming, so we'll have to see what they have in store." Michael?
Thank you very much for that roundup, G. G tweets for our program's Twitter account at VOA_IE, and you can follow her on Twitter. Her handle is at G Abby Lee. This is VOA.
This is Green Beat for a healthier planet.
Camille Chéri already knows what he wants to do when he grows up. In fact, he's already doing it.
For the near future, I hope to be at the COP22 and have a stand there where I can show the benefits of recycling to little kids and families here in Morocco.
Chéri is referring to talks on climate change taking place this year in Marrakesh. The teenager started an e-recycling center at his home in Rabat because, he says, electronic recycling didn't exist in Morocco at the time. So the 14-year-old began recycling electronics at his school, then expanded to 3 other schools, an embassy, and a few businesses.
I went and looked up some recyclers here in Morocco. So then those recyclers, I signed them some conventions, which then allowed me to work with them, and they would come and help me recycle the waste.
Pretty darn enterprising for a 10th grader. Chéri hopes to continue his studies in sustainable development in the United States. Harvard, Yale, are you listening? I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
I'm Michael Lippin with VOA's International Edition. U.S. health officials say the more researchers learn about Zika, the more concerned they are about the neurological effects and long-term complications from the virus. Those officials were speaking about Zika today at a White House press briefing. Arup Pandey is VOA's White House correspondent. I asked her on the phone a short time ago why the officials were raising new concerns about Zika now.
Well, basically, they're saying that they're learning something new every day, and they're citing some of the recent studies that have come out showing that the complications from Zika go beyond just microcephaly, which has been widely reported. Today we had the CDC come out and say that basically it can cause anything from blindness in infants, and they're also worried about the long-term effects, not just microcephaly, but maybe this is can cause certain things like paralysis and be linked to other neurological disorders. So what they're saying is we don't know enough right now, and we're still learning, we're still doing research, and at the same time, we're combating the spread of this disease, and we want to make sure we have the resources to do so, and at the same time, you know, think about the long-term implications that they're still learning about. How does Zika affect not just, you know, pregnant women, infants, adults, and so on?
What kind of resources do U.S. officials say they need to fight Zika?
Well, last week we had the White House basically come out and say that they're allocating $600 million of what was Ebola funding to fight the Zika virus. And this comes out of the fact that the president in February requested $1.9 billion in emergency funding to fight Zika. And so far, Congress has not approved that funding. So the White House, in a push last week, said, look, we've waited long enough, and we need to do something to provide the funding that we need. So we're going to take roughly $600 million from existing resources that we have to fight Ebola and move them to fight Zika. And today's, at the White House press briefing, some of what we heard from both the NIH's Dr. Fauci and the CDC's Xu Xiaoyu is that we need this money, and the money has to come now. And they're saying that without this, we won't be able to continue the research that we need to do. We're developing vaccines. We're working on Zika prevention and education. And there's only so much of the reallocation and transferring funds from here to there. But Dr. Fauci today was pretty confident that, you know, the more that people hear about what we're learning, as he said, on Zika, the more that I know that we will eventually get that funding. But they did raise the alarm, saying that, quote, it is scarier than what we once thought, and that what they're learning is, quote, not reassuring.
Well, just quickly, is there any sense of why this money isn't forthcoming?
No, we haven't heard from Congress as to, you know, we've seen individual lawmakers say, look, you know, use the money from Ebola. That money is there, use it. But we haven't, you know, heard specific reasons as to, no, we're not, you know, going to approve this funding. So the White House is really putting pressure on Congress. Today, the White House spokesman said, look, this is a nonpartisan issue. This is not something that we should bring politics into. It's something that we really need to act on as a country. So he was really urging and putting the pressure on Congress to approve this emergency funding as soon as possible.
Okay. Thank you very much to White House correspondent Arup Pandey for speaking to International Edition.
Thanks, Michael.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter is visiting India to discuss increased U.S. cooperation with the South Asian nation's military. Traveling with him is VOA correspondent Carla Babb. Earlier, my colleague Susan Yaki caught up with Babb on the phone and asked her what Carter has been saying about President Barack Obama's upcoming meeting with his Gulf partners in the Saudi capital, Riyadh.
Well, he actually said that the political and economic progress is very important to making the campaign against the Islamic State a success. He said that the president would be looking to ask the Gulf partners to help contribute to rebuilding Iraq, because he said that that is what is necessary to make the defeat against the defeat of the Islamic State stick, he said. He also mentioned that the United States planned to help the Iraqis accelerate the military campaign as fast as they possibly could.
Today, the defense secretary was visiting with U.S. and Indian forces. How did all that go?
That was quite an interesting time. The secretary actually spent some time on one of the aircraft carriers of the Indian fleet. And then he went and spoke to some of the troops of the USS Blue Ridge. That's part of the U.S. 7th Fleet, which is the largest Navy fleet that we have in the Asia-Pacific. He mentioned how important it was to be there and to protect the sea lanes in the Asia-Pacific region, pointing out that about 90% of all trade that's done across the globe reaches the sea at some point. So it was a very interesting day. I know that they have been talking, the secretary and his officials with him have been talking with their Indian counterparts on trading technology. There have been talks about aircraft carrier technology when he was on the aircraft carrier, because, you know, the Indians, they have an aircraft carrier that has a ramp that helps to build the seat up for the planes to go in the air. The United States, on the other hand, has this advanced technology that has a catapult that can help the airplanes get in the air faster and easier. And so the Indians are very interested. And I was speaking to an Indian official who said they are looking for a third aircraft carrier in around the time frame of 2028. So sharing this technology is very important to them.
And that was VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb speaking with International Edition's Susan Yaki. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Astronomers from Vanderbilt and Harvard universities have discovered a binary star system nearly 10,000 light years from Earth, where it takes 69 years for one of its stars to eclipse the other. But once it does, the eclipse lasts for 3.5 years. The researchers described their findings in a paper that's been accepted for publication in the Astronomical Journal. This star system, which has no official name, has set a new record for having both the longest duration stellar eclipse and the longest period between eclipses in a binary system. Until this discovery, the previous record holder was Epsilon Origae, an eclipsing binary system that is only 2,000 light years from Earth. That star system's yellow giant star is eclipsed by its normal-sized companion, that's slightly bigger than our sun, for 640 to 730 days every 27 years. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. U.S. aluminum manufacturer Alcoa reported a better-than-expected quarterly profit on Monday, but its profits were down dramatically from a year ago on weaker-than-expected revenue. Those results mark the start of a new U.S. corporate earnings season. I asked our financial reporter in New York, Jill Malandrino, why investors are closely watching Alcoa and other results coming out this week.
In terms of Alcoa today, the reason why it's important, it is one of the largest commodity companies on the planet. The focus for investors will be the performance of the downstream business, which is the product end of the business, and how the company is operating amid ongoing commodity pressure. So this is what we're also going to be looking for on a macro level from the banks later this week. We have JP Morgan on Wednesday, Bank of America and Wells Fargo on Thursday, and Citigroup on Friday. And just like with Alcoa, it's not necessarily the specific reports. We want to hear how the banks are operating in a very low interest rate environment, just like we want to hear how Alcoa is operating in a low commodity environment. For banks, it's very hard to grow net interest margins, to grow earnings, to grow revenue when we are in an environment with very low to negative interest rates. They can't grow their balance sheets. So not only do we want to hear about the individual reports for the companies, we want to hear about their outlook going forward on the sector and on the economy. And it's interesting because according to S&P Global Market Intelligence, only 3 of 10 S&P 500 sectors are projected to have positive earnings growth for the first quarter. Consumer discretionary, telecom, healthcare, they're expected to lead the way. The energy sector will post a quarterly loss for the first time since the firm started collecting data. But again, this is where it gets interesting. A poor earnings season, it's not a surprise to anyone, and perhaps that was reflected in the January sell-off. Traders I speak with think that this is why we've seen very choppy sideways trading, because if the market in 2016 has taught us anything, when market participants are leaning towards a certain bias, like everyone was so bullish in January, we ended up getting, the market went for a thrashing. Everyone is so bearish now because they think we're overbought and the market continues to go up. So we're starting to hear this more in financial media and traders that we speak with, that it's almost the Max Payne trade. Regardless of what the herd is thinking, the market is putting up numbers completely opposite of that. So it's going to be very interesting to see how earnings plays out with everyone so bearish.
Well, thank you very much for that Wall Street roundup from our financial reporter in New York, Jill Malandrino.
Okay, thanks very much, Michael.
Well, now it's time for some music for nine young female artists in Ivory Coast. Breaking into that country's male-dominated music industry wasn't easy. But their group, Bella Mondo, is now a household name in Abidjan and is booking shows abroad. Emily Eob has the story from the Ivorian capital.
Abidjan. The nine women of Belamondo win over yet another audience at this bar in Abidjan. This was the first venue to book them years ago, and they still play here weekly. Belamondo is one of the few all-female ensembles in Ivory Coast. It all started back in 2007 when a music producer came to then-music student Prisca Alou. She says the man told her he wanted to create an all-female band to fulfill a promise he made to his late mother. He says she kept telling him he should showcase women making music, not just men. So Alou spread the word she was looking for band members and placed ads in local papers. She says parents resisted the idea. They would say they didn't send their daughter to school to have her go play guitar on the street. Being a musician was frowned upon for girls. She says in Africa, a woman's place is often seen as being either in an office or at home. That was a stereotypical image. Most of the girls Alou managed to recruit weren't professional musicians. The group spent the next 4 years learning to play their instrument. Many gave up, but 8 of them soldiered on with Alou, and the band was born. Soon they began performing together, playing covers and original songs. Their musical style is best described as variété. The band dabbles in funk, reggae, and pop music. Guitar player Clotilde Blay says many didn't believe the band would last. People will tell us that women can't make it work, that they can't get along together, she says. So we took that as a challenge. One they have met. In 2013, Belamondo released their first album, and over the years they have performed at galas, official dinners, and on stages in Europe and West Africa. Nodding his head to the music during a live performance in Abidjan is music enthusiast Kader Nanema. He remembers the first time he saw them. I was surprised at first, he says. A woman singing, you see that every day. But an entire band with just women playing all the instruments, that was extraordinary. I was dumbstruck, he says. The band is great and the girls are top-notch. Alou believes Belamondo inspired other women to push social barriers. Today, she says, when I go out, I'm proud to see young women carrying a guitar, a keyboard, or a drum around. And I know that we have played a role in this. She says, we gave other women the desire to do this, and it makes me very proud. The Belamondo are currently preparing their second album. Emily Yap for VOA News in Abidjan.
And that's it for International Edition on the Voice of America. Your director today was Tracy Carter and the engineer was Daryl Smith. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Michael_Lippin and I would love to hear from you. Have a great week.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Embassy in the Bahamas, through the U.S. Department of State, sponsored a sub-regional international visitor leadership program, professional exchange program, focused on combating corruption in March 2016. The Bahamas Supreme Court Judge Justice Bernard Turner and Tribune reporter Krishna Virgil represented the Bahamas in the program. Other countries represented included Guyana, Jamaica, and Suriname. On March 31st, Justice Turner and Ms. Virgil paid a courtesy call on the U.S. Charge d'Affaires, Lisa Johnson, at the U.S. Embassy to discuss their participation in the program. During the exchange, the participants visited Washington, D.C., Manchester, New Hampshire, and Raleigh, North Carolina. They explored the vital role of public-private partnerships and media in supporting good governance and discouraging corruption, examined the dynamics of political campaign financing and government procurement, learned best practices in combating corruption, and looked at the mechanisms that enable citizens to foster good governance, ethical standards, and accountability at the local, state, and federal levels. Corruption is a deadly enemy of democracy and government. The United States is proud to work with its partner, the Bahamas, in promoting the transparency and integrity in government that the people of the Bahamas have a right to expect.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.